Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 236 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm so happy that you are here. Joining me today for another great interview with a Magic player who has made it to the top echelons of competitive Magic. And it's so fun to follow them on their journey, whether they're new to the scene, meaning it's their first time making top 8 of a Grand Prix, for example, or they are veterans. It's always fun to learn how they started, what they do that we don't. And that's really the crux of this show, is to really bridge the gap between what the pros do and what we do, because I think we can learn from everybody and we can take our game to the next level no matter where we are by following those who have gone before us, you know. So it's really interesting to hear new people's perspectives and get their insights on how they approach different situations. It's so fun when we ask the same question to different people, the different answers that we get. So anyways, I just love this show. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking the time to put me in your balls. Like, this is so fun to do this together. So hope that you are having a blast playing Magic. If you're not a member of the Pro Tutor Prodigy group yet, I highly recommend that you join us on Facebook and carry on a discussion about what deck you're playing, what events you're going to, tell us how your events went, so we can just help you out and really talk about you and your situation and apply what we learn here on the show to the Magic games that we play every single day. And before we dive into the show, I want to say thank you to the sponsors of the show. First, the patrons. This would not be possible without you. So mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can learn more about that. And ParagonCityGames.com is where you can learn about Paragon City Games and what they have going on. And the great example of Magic community building they are. So they are an amazing store. They provide the prizes for our sealed leagues and other events that we have here on the show. So they're just a great store and I love them. So Paragon City Games is definitely a worthy place to check out. Speaking of sealed leagues, the Pro Tutor Prodigy Ixalan Sealed League is here. Signups are now. There is an event in the group that you can come on and join. Let me know that you are attending. And in that event, we're going to post all the details you need. The plan is to start the league about a week after Ixalan is released on Magic Online. So that gives us this week and next week to do the signups, and then we will get the cards on Magic Online. We will publish in that event how to get them to you. We'll give you a couple days to build your deck, and then we'll dive into our Swiss round. There'll be a cut to top 8. The first place player will get an Ixalan bundle provided by Paragon City Games. So I think that's absolutely awesome. You're going to get real cards in your hands that you can use this standard season. How cool is that? The second place player will win enough to cover their entry fee for the next league plus some more. Or they can choose to take their prize in tickets or cash. The third and fourth player will win enough to cover their entry fee for the next league if they choose. And then, of course, they can take it in ticks or cash as well. And then 5 through 8 will win half of the entry fee for the next league. And, of course, can take it out in ticks or cash. So there's the breakdown. First place gets real physical Magic product in the form of an Ixalan bundle, which is about $40 USD, provided by Paragon City Games. And then 2nd through 8 will have some portion of their entry fee for the next league covered, whether that's in full or down to half, and of course can redeem it in ticks or cash. So we love doing this league. When I say we, I mean me and Sam Rubin, who's been a wonderful prodigy, a great member of our community for a long, long time now. He's been running the leagues and doing a great job, in addition to building up his Magic stream audience. So we're going to be definitely hearing more from Sam in the future. Great guy. And that's really it for the top of the show stuff. I'm so excited about our sealed league. I'm really grateful to the patrons of Paragon City Games for sponsoring the show. And as I mentioned, we have a fantastic guest lined up. So without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm really excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a Swiss Magic the Gathering player living in Geneva and has won Grand Prix Top 8 at GP Metz 2017, which was Hour of Devastation Limited. Coming to us from Geneva, Switzerland, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Théophile Delavie. Théo, how are you doing today?
Hey, Sean. I'm doing good. And you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, you can find Théo on Facebook. He's not on Twitter, on Facebook. That's the best way to find him on social media if you're interested. He's not on Twitter, but that's okay. We'll forgive you for that. Théo, so tell us a little bit about what you have going on outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. So are you born and raised in Geneva?
I'm born in Geneva. I've lived there for 10 years before moving to France, where I grew up for 7 years. I studied at school in France for 7 years. And then when I, when I got 18, I got back to Geneva to live with my father and study at the university. And then I found a job in Geneva, so I stayed there.
Excellent.
I've lived partly in France and partly in Swiss.
Okay.
Switzerland.
Perfect. So what do you do for work? What's your job?
I'm a due diligence analyst. That means I look for information about companies. And usually it's useful for their business partners. They want to be sure that they won't be engaged in business with companies that are involved in corruption, money laundering, this kind of stuff.
They want to
protect themselves. That's the goal of what I do.
And is that what you studied at university?
No, not really. I studied socioeconomics, sociology and economics. And then I didn't know really what to do after that. So I found the job a bit, I don't know how to say it in English, but paraza, yeah.
That's fine. So you studied socioeconomics and then went into the job that you have, you know, now, just kind of seeing what's out there and this is what you found.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly. That is what happened.
So we'd love to hear how magic fits into all of that. We'd love to hear your origin story. So can you take us back in time and tell us the story of the first time that you played with magic cards?
Okay. So I was 14. I was in English, I believe it's high school or maybe before that. But well, I was 14. A friend of mine at school showed me his magic cards, and I tried with him, and I played maybe for 1 year. Then I stopped. Then when I was at high school, so maybe it's even before that. Then when I was at high school, I met some other guys who were playing magic. So maybe when I was 17 or around 17, I started again playing magic for maybe 1 year. Then I stopped again. And then when I was 21 or 22, so at this time I was in Geneva. Here I met guys playing magic for the third time. And with them, I started playing limited, which I've never done before. And with them, I also began to play at PTQs and small tournaments, stuff like that. And a few months later, I played my first Grand Prix at Strasbourg. And since then, with these guys, I kept, I've been playing in GPs maybe for 3 years, I believe now. So maybe 4 or 5 GPs per year.
Nice. So off and on, like many of us do. And, you know, your first introduction was back when you were 14. Do you remember what that first set was for you?
Yeah, it was a Champion of Kamigawa.
Excellent. Oh, that's so fun. So Champions of Kamigawa was your first set. And then you left for a little bit and then you came back. And in your ins and outs and since you've been playing, what's been your favorite set?
It's Champions of Kamigawa.
Oh, excellent. So why did you like that set? What about that makes it special?
I love the arts, the Japanese flavor, and the ninjas, all that stuff. It's really, for the arts, it's my favorite set. I know that people don't like it very much because maybe it's not that powerful, but it's the only one. Oh, no, that's wrong. Kind of Tarkir also has kind of a Asian sub-theme, so I really like this one also as well. But yeah, my favorite one is Champions of Kamigawa.
So would you like to go back to Kamigawa?
Yeah, if I could, I would, yeah, very much.
So, hey, you never know if Wizards will bring that one back around, because you're right, like, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, the Kamigawa block, whatever. And that's cool that you like it, but, you know, you never know, maybe Wizards will go back and say, hey, let's do it different and see if they can do it right or whatever. So that'd be kind of fun. So along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
Oh, so my favorite card is Dark Confidant.
So for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Okay, so it's a 2-1 for 2. It's black. So 1 colorless and 1 black. It's a creature, obviously. And it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, you reveal the top card of your deck. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost, and then you put a card in your hand. So it allows players to draw 2 cards a turn, but at the same time, you lose life. So you have to kill your opponent faster than the pace of you are at which you are losing. So yeah, I really like it because it's sort of a bit dangerous, but at the same time, it's so powerful. The effect is so powerful that it's worth playing. And yeah, what I like is drawing cards, but if you can draw cards and at the same time kill your opponent, it's even better. And this creature lets you do that because as you keep drawing, you can sort of kill all their stuff and keep attacking with your creatures. And yeah, the effect is really, really powerful.
Awesome. And what formats do you play that you use Dark Confidant?
I started playing this creature in French Commander.
You want Commander? Yeah, cool.
It's kind of a special format where you have 99 cards and one general, and you can play only colors of your general. So my general was my commander was Doran the Siege Tower. Mm-hmm. So all I could play was black, green, and white cards. And I like to play kind of an aggro deck, so Dark Confidant fits perfectly this kind of deck.
Ah, very fun.
I started playing this card here. Then I also tried it in Modern. When the Siege Rhino came out, I tried the deck with Dark Confidant, Tarmogoyf, and Siege Rhinos. And that was really good as well.
Excellent. So are you more constructed or limited player? Like, which one suits you better?
Limited for sure.
Okay.
Now I play almost unlimited.
Wow. And so obviously you just made top 8 of a limited Grand Prix and you're going to go off to the Pro Tour. Which Pro Tour are you queued for the modern one?
I believe it's Bilbao in February 2018.
Okay. Yep. So that will be the modern Pro Tour then.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, I mean, you know, you're a mostly limited player, but now you're going to go to a modern Pro Tour. What's that like? Like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to reconcile, you know, your skills?
I mostly play limited, but I still like constructed. So okay. It's not that big a deal. I will probably try some decks, maybe 1-2 months before the tournament.
Okay.
Find one that I like and keep practicing with it to feel more comfortable with it.
Do you have a go-to modern deck right now? Like, if you were going to a modern tournament right now, what would you play?
I don't have lately I've been playing Valakut,
okay.
But I don't like the deck that much anymore because I feel like it has a not very favorable matchup against Death Shadow.
Mm.
And the Death Shadows deck have evolved. And before I was confident that the Valakut could deal with all the threats because before they were playing only, for example, they were playing only Tarmogoyfs and Death Shadow as their threats. So I thought, oh, that's great. I can put the Engineered Explosives in my sideboard. And if I play against them, I can bring that and I can kill their creatures and have more time to win through the combo.
Mm-hmm.
But because now they have also the Delph creatures, there is no clear answer for Valakut to bring. So because I can't answer the threats, I have to race. And I think that it's a losing proposition because I won't have the tool at the appropriate time all that often. So yeah, I would rather just play something else.
Okay, cool. And, you know, especially for the Pro Tour, you know, you have several months and you don't really want to lock in anything now. So like you said, you know, mm-hmm. 2-3 months out, start kind of looking at the field, and about 2 months out, you're going to, you know, start narrowing down your decks and then practice mm-hmm. for that and off you go. So are you going to be able to like practice with any other Pro Tour qualified people? Since this is your first Pro Tour, who are you going to practice with? How's that going to, do you have any plans for that? What's that look like?
I may ask to some Swiss-German players if they are qualified, because I know some Swiss-German players that are also quite good at Magic. And yeah, otherwise, maybe I can try to reach some French players that are qualified. And other than that, I'm just going to practice with my friends in Geneva.
So reach out to other qualified players and say, hey, let's do this together.
Yeah,
good way
I'm not sure if they will accept me, but I could try that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So when you started taking Magic more seriously and started becoming more competitive, what was an early challenge that you struggled with but that you eventually overcame?
I think it's the stress that I felt when I played. For example, when I went to my first PTQ, it was really stressful for me because it's almost like I have to prove myself and the others that I'm worth being there, being here. Like, I'm good enough to play Magic here in a competitive event. And that made me really feel a lot of stress. So I was really anxious to lose because that would mean I'm not at the right place. And now I don't feel that anymore or much less. That means if I lose, that's okay, that's fine. It happens to everybody. Like, no big deal. And I can just lose and keep focused for the next game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a huge difference. When I started, for example, because it was most often a limited PTQ, if I opened a good deck or a good pool, I would be confident in my ability to win. So I could go like win, win, win. But then if I start losing, it would be terrible and I would have a hard time to keep focused. Whereas now I can just lose and not make it a big deal. Or I can just go lose, 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 and that's not a big deal either because I don't have to prove myself or to anybody else, actually. Like, if I go lose, 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 and I draw the tournament, that's not a big deal.
Right.
But that wouldn't be the case when I started. So, yeah, that's the biggest difference for me, I believe.
Yeah, so you mentioned you felt that pressure to kind of prove to people that you belonged at Magic events and whatnot. And contrasting that to now, where you don't feel that pressure or that stress, what did you do to overcome it? Was it just, you know, keep on going, or just tell us that process? How did you get over that stress? How were you able to kind of, hey, it's not that big of a deal if I lose, it happens to everybody. What did that look like for you?
That's a long process. It's like that because I became more and more confident about what matters in Magic. So, for example, by reading articles or listening to podcasts about Magic, I learned a lot about the game. Also by playing, I became more confident about my skills, for example, and all that added to the point that I felt like I became confident that I was good enough to play competitive Magic events. And also that somebody, maybe it sounds a bit obvious what I'm going to say, but somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. So sometimes it's going to be me that wins, and that's good, but sometimes it's going to be someone else, and that's fine too. So yeah, I can just go to a tournament, be really prepared, and then if I lose, well, whatever. And also, I don't fear to be judged anymore. Like, for example, if I would perform badly to a tournament, I would feel not ashamed, but a bit sad that I didn't perform well. And I hope that people don't deduce from that I'm a bad Magic player. And now really, I don't care what people think about me as a Magic player. I can punt. I can lose really badly. I can make mistakes. And that doesn't matter.
That's so, like you said, it's a long process. And you know, Magic players all over the world are at different stages in that journey, you know, and some are mm-hmm. early on like you, or they're really stressed, or they haven't even gone to their first big event, you know, a PPTQ or Grand Prix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Some are, you know, they're still stressed when they go because they feel like they need to, you know, prove to people that, hey, I belong here, you know, I'm good. And others are, you know, where you are, where they understand, hey, you know, like, there is a winner and there is a loser. Sometimes it's me and sometimes it's not, you know, and then every level in between. And sometimes some events you do pretty well and feel pretty good. Other events you're all stressed out again and kind of going back and forth. And so it's really interesting to hear, you know, what others do to kind of, you know, move through that and to, really understand, you know, what it takes to be a good Magic player. And part of that is just, you know, calming down and understanding it's a game and just really approaching it like, hey, I'm going to do my best and what happens, happens. And who cares what people mm-hmm. think? You know, you don't need mm-hmm. to prove to anybody. If you enjoy the game, just get out there and play, you know?
Yeah.
So good stuff. So what have been some of your Magic milestones, you know, other than your Grand Prix Top 8, which we're going to get to in a second? Looking back, what were some of the times that you kind of stepped up or said, hey, like, I'm on my way up?
Okay, so, well, I started playing PTQs mm-hmm. and maybe the, I don't know, third, fourth PTQ it top 8ed. So that was quite important for me. It was with a Cairns of Tarkir, PTQ in limited time, Cairns, sealed. And a few weeks or months after that, I played my first GP, which was Cairns of Tarkir sealed also, sealed and draft. And I top 8ed, I didn't top 8. I made day 2 on my first GP.
Nice.
So that was really important for me also because I realized that, yeah, I could go quite long even in a long tournament like that. And after that, I played some more GBs where I performed worse. Like I've gone 3-4 drop or 4-3 drop. And then I started making day 2 again. It was 7-2 every time, but still I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I could draft then. And then I made 8-1 in London, I believe. So it was the first time I really felt like I could top 8 the GP because my record was, I felt good enough to support me mm-hmm. up to the top 8. Didn't make it this time. Then I played some more GPs where I had quite poor results. But that's fine. Again. And then in Metz, I went 8-1 again. But this time, what was different was that I was not worried about my performance. I was not worried if I would make top 8 or not. I was just glad to have been there. And maybe it has helped me because I did manage to top 8. But yeah, it was, going 7-2, my first GP was really important. And debating a PTQ was important before that because I felt like I could have a good result, not just only to an FNM, but also to a quite bigger tournament.
Man, that's awesome. It's so fun to hear, you know, that progression and, you know, making day 2 of your first Grand Prix, that's really neat, kind of sets the stage. You know, I can do it. I'm a good player or whatever. And then again, not everybody sustains that. And like you said, you went through a little period where you didn't, you know, make day 2 or whatever, but you understood, hey, that's part of the game. It's okay. You just kept at it. And I love that because I really feel that because there is an amount of variance involved in Magic, once your skill level is where it needs to be, it's kind of a matter of time, you know? And so once you've like mm-hmm. made day 2, you're not going to make day 2 every time, but you know that your skill level is there. So you can count on being able to make, you know, day 2. And then, and then now you've done your first top 8. And so it might be like, you know, a little spike in skill level. And, you know, there might be some other Grand Prix where you don't, but then you make it again. And then you start cementing the fact that you are, you know, a top 8 player. And it's just kind of like a progression, you know, on your way up. And I think that's really neat to kind of mm-hmm. hear you walk through that. So that's really neat. So, when you made day 2 that on your first Grand Prix, what did that feel like? Like, what did that mean for you?
Oh, I was super happy, also super stressed. Mm. As I said, it was huge pressure. I remember that there was Tom Martel in my first draft pod, so I knew he was a pro player and I had to play against him. Mm. I was really stressed. I played really badly, for example, because I had a Planeswalker that I didn't activate once.
Mm.
So because it's unlimited with Planeswalker, you're usually crushing. So I won, but still I was not playing really well. It was just, I had a super powerful card that carried me through that game. So yeah, I was really, at the same time, super happy and super stressed.
Super happy, super stressed.
Yeah. And now Yeah. Now, if I had to play the same game, maybe I would lose. That would be fine. But it would definitely be a more relieved.
Yeah, more less stressed, like more relaxed.
Yeah, less stressed about playing against a pro player, for example.
Right, more relaxed. Man, awesome. So I love to learn about how you prepared for these events. You talked about, GP to GP, and I'm interested in what you were doing in between there. And so to kind of give it context, let's go to the Grand Prix, Grand Prix Metz, where you made top eight. Mm-hmm. How did you prepare for that event? So back us up, how far out? And this was limited, so it's going to be, I would love to hear that process. How did you prepare for this limited event? What did you do?
Okay, so usually we play with my friends in Geneva. We play limited between one and two times a week. Usually every FNM we play limited, and also we go to one friend's place and we play on the Wednesday, for example, usually. And then we do a draft also. So we play, for example, two drafts a week in usual conditions, one to two drafts a week. And when there is a limited Grand Prix coming, we are all super stoked about this. So we try to play a bit more limited, but that means two to three times a week, but not that much. And at the same time, we discuss the picks. We try to give advice to each other. For example, what are the tricks? What are the good tricks to play around and this kind of stuff? And for Metz, what was new was that I tried the MTGO. I haven't played an MTGO for since I started, basically. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend who was practicing an MTGO. He said it was really helpful to practice. So I did play an MTGO also before Metz, maybe 1 week before the tournament. I did one draft every evening, an MTGO, and that was really helpful because, well, I played maybe five drafts before the tournament, so I was even more prepared than how I would have been usually. And, well, that's it. Then when on our way to Metz, we build seal decks with my friends. We tried to build, two, three seal decks, talked with each other about how we like the buildings, how we build our decks, maybe swap something. That was our preparation.
Man, that's awesome. I love that you did several different things to really help. One is you're just consistently playing limited. That's really neat. You said one or two times a week, you're getting together with friends and you're playing. So you're constantly in that limited space and understanding the cards and how they interact with each other. You talked about discussing your picks with people. I think that's a really, really mm-hmm. good thing to be doing. And then leading up to your event, you're like, hey, let's dive in and get some more reps in. And so you hopped on Magic Online, which I think is a really great resource. It's not obviously the best interface, but it's really good resource because you're able to, every day get a draft in and just practice, mm-hmm. The card selection and interactions and, making decisions. And so that's really neat that you use the tools available to you. So what do you think about Magic Online helped you out the most?
Just the sheer number of drafts that I've been able to play. For example, if I could draft twice or even three times a week before, it would have been great. It would have been more than what I can usually afford. So I would have been really happy about that. With Magic Online, I can do, one draft every evening. That's five drafts before the GP. That's, an even higher rate than that. So I'm really happy. Obviously, I don't like the interface, mm-hmm. Especially because I'm a new player, so I misclick every time.
Yeah.
Almost once a game, I misclick. So it's harder to win that way, but well, still, that's really helpful. And I hope that I get better and better with the software. And, that's really useful to have a high sheer number of drafts before the event. After that, I still prefer playing a draft with real cards. So for now, I haven't been playing in Magic in MTGO anymore. I've just been playing regular drafts with cards.
Yeah, it's a good resource, and I still consider myself new to it too, just like you. I'll miss, for me, it's like when to do stuff. Like, for example, I normally, you know, if I want to do something before damage, but like if the priority gets passed to me and I miss it and I hit okay, then it just goes straight to damage. I'm like, oh, I wanted to pump my guy or whatever. And so,
Exactly what happens to me.
Yeah, little stuff like that. Where in paper Magic, it'll be like, okay, before, you know, blocks, no blocks. Okay, before damage, pump this guy and we're good to go. But it's a little trickier, you know, for those of us who aren't fully initiated, I guess. So anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So Theo, you had an awesome, you know, journey. You've played a lot of Magic against, you know, people all over the world. What is the biggest mistake that you have seen players make?
Oh, see players make, or that I do myself, or
that you see others? Yeah, that you see others make.
Ah, that I see others make. Honestly, I'm going to try to find an answer, but I'm not really that focused on what other players make as a mistake. So yeah, I'm really focusing on what I do. Mm-hmm. If I find that I do something poorly, I try to correct it. And other than that, what the other players make as a mistake, yeah, I don't really focus that much on it. But what could I say? I would say maybe it's being too aggressive when they're winning.
How so?
So, for example, if I'm in my board position is worse than my opponent, so I feel like I'm losing. I don't have a good board position. I don't have any good attacks. My opponent is putting maybe just a small amount of pressure on me, but that's still enough. And I cannot see myself winning from this board position. And I don't see a lot of good draws that could help me out from here. And at some point, my opponent has a bigger and bigger board. And he goes all in. He's like, yeah, whatever, I'm winning. Beam, an alpha strike. He attacks with everything. And by doing so, I'm able to line up good blocks, have good trades that I could not do before that, and use my combat tricks in a better way that I would have been able if I was the one attacking. And then the board becomes in my favor again.
Yeah.
And sometimes even I'm winning again instead of just I was losing. So yeah, I would say sometimes maybe the deal me 2-3 points of damage a turn, and that should be just still good enough. Or sometimes they are not even dealing me any damage. It's just that they have a better board position, and I'm losing, for example, I'm decking first, so they have not really any pressure to attack me. And I think they should just wait until they have a really good attack, clear attack with a flyer, for example. But instead of doing that, once they have a bigger board, they just attack with everything. And by doing so, I'm able to get back in the game that I was never going to win otherwise.
So interesting. Yeah, like recognizing when you need to press and when you need to step back. And because we've also heard the other side, which is not being aggressive enough when you are winning, you know. And so it's I love these conversations because, you know, people pick out different things that from different games, and there's always a fine balance. Like, there's no, you know, one size fits all answer in Magic, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, actually, they don't know what I have in my deck, so they could still think, oh, maybe he has this huge unbeatable bomb, like a huge flyer that draw cards,
right?
And that I cannot beat ever, so I should start being aggressive. So yeah, it's a fine line, but sometimes it's really amazing because they could attack like with one creature for several turns, and that would be just enough pressure.
Yeah.
And that's easy to see that it's a good attack. And suddenly the attack with everything, they don't kill me, but they lose half their board. I lose also some creatures, but not the very good ones. And suddenly their board is not good enough to win the game.
Right.
So I think that even if you fear the huge bomb in from the opponent's side, unless you know they have it, so there you have to be aggressive, I believe. But if you don't know, I think you should consider the board first and then what could happen. You shouldn't throw away half your board to not kill him.
Right.
Just because you're afraid of about a bomb or something like that.
Wow. Good stuff. So on your journey, you've had ups and downs, highs and lows that you have learned from. What has been your worst Magic moment? Was there an event or a time that just stands out to you as being pretty bad? And what did you learn from that experience?
I would say maybe at GP Utrecht.
Okay.
Or at GP Kyoto. At GP Utrecht, I was really stoked about, it was Modern Masters Limited. I was really stoked about it. And, hoping that it would be like the first Modern Masters, where you could play grindy, card advantage decks with a very good, late game. And instead of that, you couldn't build that really properly. So you had to be more, the decks had to be more synergy centric. And I didn't see that. So I was really in the wrong mindset to build my decks, and I did perform poorly. And after that helped me, reevaluate the sets every time they come out. Like, don't expect that Modern Masters 2 is going to be the same as Modern Masters 1 just because it's the same name. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are good cards, but the archetypes were really very different. And also in Kyoto, it was this year, we had a trip in Japan with friends for 2 weeks before going to the tournament. And I was really not super... super hyped about Magic this time because Japan was such an amazing country to discover, mm-hmm. to visit. I was really looking forward to visiting the city, like Kyoto, Tokyo. I was not really looking forward to preparing to draft Magic. And so I prepared, I believe, quite poorly, and I did perform badly. And I think that, in hindsight, I would have still played the GP, obviously, but I would have either prepared before going to Japan or, I don't know how I could have done it better, but what I mean is that sometimes if I'm not in the mood for playing Magic, I shouldn't do it. So this time I was engaged. I had paid my fee to register to the tournament. So I did come there, but I was not really prepared and it was not a really good experience.
Interesting. So the first one, you learn to evaluate each new set on its own. Obviously you can take your knowledge from past sets about, cards and whether they're baseline good or not, but to really look at each set and not really assume that it's going to be similar to a past set, even if it's the same block or has a similar name. I thought that was a really good, takeaway. You really wanted, a particular archetype to work, and then it didn't, and you weren't really, you hadn't really studied the synergies of the new set, and so it kind of bit you in the butt there. And then the other one, you're just so excited to be in a new city and just, explore and do the whole touristy thing that Magic was not in the forefront of your mind. And I think Magic is fun. Part of the reason is you get to travel to cool new places and see new things. And there's nothing wrong with, exploring, but also keep in mind, what's important to me this trip? Is it the sightseeing and the tourism? Because that's totally fine if it is. Or is it the magic? And whatever you choose, just, allot yourself the time to do both if you can, to practice mm-hmm. and then do sightseeing afterwards, right? Or the other way around, you know? So I think that's really neat that you learned those two lessons. That's fun.
Yeah. Or just having a break, for example.
Yeah.
There was a GP in Bologna maybe 1 year, 2 years ago. And at first I was super stoked about it. But finally I realized I didn't really want to play. It was in the Eldrazi era in Modern. Like the whole format was playing Eldrazi. And I didn't think I would have fun playing that. So I didn't come to the tournament and I was really glad I did. So sometimes even if you like Magic, not going to a tournament is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
If you don't think you're not going to have fun.
Right, right.
Like it's not a job, it's a hobby. So yeah.
So the flip side are our highs. What has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Oh, well, this one is quite easy. I would say it's the GP Top 8.
Yeah, so cool. Man, and that is such a fun experience and hopefully the first of many for you. So how many pro points do you have now?
I'm not sure. I believe 6.
Excellent. What are your plans this season? I mean, obviously you're going to get 3 more at the Pro Tour, but are you going to go to other GPs and, you know, are you going to try and get bronze or silver? What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at it really precisely yet, but I will, by curiosity. As I say, I still want the game to be fun, to be a pleasure and not a job, so I won't go to every GP that I can afford. I will go, though, to the Team GP in Lyon for sure.
Cool.
And also to the Team GP in Madrid this year. And I will try to go to Liverpool because it's a limited GP. But this one, I'm not sure. And for example, if I don't go to Liverpool, that's fine. But yeah, the Team GPs, I really want to play them. They're the most fun experience in Magic. So yeah, this one I won't miss.
Have you done other team events before?
Yeah, I've been to 2 team GPs in Limited. And yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Two or three.
Did you have the same teammates both times?
No, it was a different teammates every time. But no problem. It's a big group of friends in Geneva. So yeah, we can switch teams and still have fun.
Still be able to go. And that's neat that Wizards is doing more of those team events because so many guests have said whenever they get to do team events that they absolutely love it. It's such a fun experience. Being able to share your accomplishments with friends is, you know, just a different kind of high than doing it on your own. And so it's fun to see that they're doing more of those.
Oh, yeah. That's the best. That's the best kind of Magic. Team events are the best kind of Magic for me.
So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
That's a good question. I would say that it's not to care too much about what others think about me or my actions. Because as I said, when I started playing Magic, I would, it's like I would have a high priority on what people think about me as a Magic player. If I play well, all that kind of stuff, would have a good opinion about me. And by playing more and more, I realized that this is really not important, like not at all, and that I should just play Magic the way I want. If I want to be competitive and really focused, I can. If I want to play a little more relaxed, maybe I'm not going to win, that's fine too. And to not care too much about what people think about me as a Magic player. So I would say that in the real life, it's also helpful, well, to still respect people, not to behave like a complete jerk, but yeah, not to care too much about what people think about my actions.
In life, to not worry so much about what others think, just be yourself. You know, you want to, like you said, to be respectful and don't be a jerk and stuff like that, but just take the actions that you want to take and don't worry if other people, you know, care or offended or whatever. And yeah, like you said, in Magic, that manifests itself as hey, if I want to be competitive, I will. If I just want to be casual, there's no obligation for me to go to events or whatever. And, you know, that's just how you play Magic, and that's totally okay. And I love that. And you can do that in life as well. So that is, that's really good. So let's see. We've talked about how your best format is limited. So I'd love some limited tips. Like, so we're recording this. Ixalan is right around the corner. When this goes live, we'll be even closer. So tell us, when you have a new set coming out, what do you do to really get into and understand that limited format?
Okay, so first I look at the set while during the spoiler season. So for example, right now I'm looking every day at the new Magic cards from Ixalan.
Yep, Ixalan, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. And then I will read the set reviews on Magic websites. When I get to practice, well, first I will play the pre-release. Then as I get to practice, I will talk a lot with people about the new cards, for example, especially the rares or the uncommons, how good they are, if they played against them, if they think it was good or not, and try to have the feedback from a lot of different people to be able to cross opinions. For example, if there is a card and someone tells me, oh, this card has been really good to me, and somebody else says about the same card, this card is really bad. That feels really interesting to me because that means the card is not easy to evaluate. So I need to try it probably, and also to talk more with people about it. And yeah, that's what I do.
I like that. You know, you study the spoilers and reset reviews, and you pay special attention to cards where the opinions vary greatly, and you hone in on those. Be like, okay, so you know, maybe it's good in a certain context. You know, who's right, who's wrong. You know, yeah, and just really kind of dive in and try and get a better understanding of that. And then what do you do with that knowledge? Do you rank all the cards, you know, like in a list like many people do for when you're drafting, or what as you're gaining this understanding, what do you do?
So this I don't do, but what I do is try to figure out, which are the, for example, for the commons, which are the really good cards in common for each color. For example, which card in white I would be happy to first pick in a draft? Which commons? And count them and see how good they are. For example, if it's a really efficient removal spell that goes really high on the list because it's probably a harder effect to replace than, say, just a good, efficient two-drop creature.
Right.
That is just meant to attack. And then I compare all the colors. I realize, okay, there are, I don't know, 3-4 cards that I really like first picking in blue and only 2 or 1 in black. And for every color, I have an opinion like that. And so that tells me that probably I'm more likely to draft blue. And also, I try to do this with the cards I really don't want to put in my deck. For example, I look at all the commons in green in one set and realize that between all the commons, maybe there are 10 commons, but there are 4 that I really, really don't want to put in my deck. That means if I draft green, there is a high chance that if somebody else is drafting green, I will end up with cards that I don't want to play. Whereas if the color is deep, that bothers me much less. And so I'm more likely to draft it because I feel like the color is good enough, is deep enough to have 2-3 players drafting it, and you would still end up with a fine deck.
That's awesome.
What I do.
That's awesome.
I don't have really rankings, so only for the very best cards. I talk with people, I say, if you crack a pack, you open this card and this card, which one would you first pick? And always with close cards, obviously. And by talking with people like that, I get myself sort of an opinion. But the value of cards is different with your deck. So let's say, for example, first pick, first pack, I would rather take a removal spell, for example. But if I know that by the second pack, I've been picking all removal spells and tricks, my creatures are going to go really up in value, my picks and creatures, because I really need them. So that will change my evaluation during the draft. So I feel like it's not really important to have a very precise evaluation between cards. Just to know first pick, first pack, which one I would rather pick, and then adapt depending on what I need for my deck.
Yeah, that's great. I love that process, especially the, you know, looking at the commons, for example, or looking at all the cards that you do not want in your deck, mm-hmm. and then seeing, okay, like the majority of those fall into this color, which means that if there's more than one person in this color, I'm probably going to end up with a bunch of these cards. I think that's really awesome. I've never thought of it, you know, that way. And then obviously identifying, all right, which cards are the best ones in the color? Like which ones I'd be happy first picking out of the color, you know? Those are really good tips. I'm so happy that you're able to share that with us. What are some magic related resources that you turn to? Like when you are doing research, what do you use?
I use a website called Magic Operation. It's a French website. And there, I read forums that they talk about cards. And also, I look at the sets because I feel like it has a clear display of the sets and a useful search tool. For example, if I'm looking at a card from World Wake that is blue and that has such text, I can look for it easily, and I really like it. Other than that, I read at the Channel Fireball articles, and sometimes I watch their videos, but not that often. Cool. And other than that, I watch GPs or Pro Tours on Twitch, if I can. Again, not that often, depends. If I have something planned on the same weekend, but right. Yeah, I like watching MTG matches sometimes.
Awesome. Well, sweet. I want to remind all you prodigies out there, you want to connect with Theo, you can do so on Facebook. That's the best place to find him on the internet. And Theo, as we close things out, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to do with us here at the end.
I've said a lot. I cannot say something new because it would be out of context. So yeah, I think if something that I said should be important or more important is, first, that it doesn't matter what people think about me. So for you, probably it's the same. It doesn't matter what people think about you as a Magic player. That helped me feel the stress less. And second is that I think Magic should always be a game, a pleasure, and not a task. It's not work. I mean, it's not for me. So if I'm not having fun, I don't mind stopping playing Magic for a while and maybe getting back to it in a few weeks.
Love it.
That's it.
Love it, love it. Theo, thank you so much. I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, for being an inspiration of a Magic player that we can look to, someone who has made their first Grand Prix Top 8, and we can say, wow, like I can do it too. So thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your time with us. You are a hero among Planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Theo, thank you so much again for coming onto the show. Absolutely loved having you here in episode 236. Prodigies, you can go to mtgpro2.com/Theo Delavie to find his show notes as well as links to any resources that may have been mentioned. Before we close out, I want to remind you, if you are interested in the Prodigy Sealed League, signups are now. Go to the Facebook group and then find it in the events. We have an Ixalan Sealed League in the events. Just tell us that you're going. We're going to be taking signups here for the next week and a half, and then we will be distributing cards 1 week after Ixalan is released on Magic Online, okay? And then we'll be playing our Swiss rounds. There'll be a cut to top eight, and everyone in the top eight is going to get a prize. So that's going to be pretty fun stuff. So if you're interested in that, go check that out.
And as we close out, thank you again to the patrons. If you're interested in supporting the show directly, you go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about how to do that. And last, but definitely not least, I want to thank Paragon City Games, the other sponsor of the show. They provide the prize support for the league as well as other giveaways, and they can be found at ParagonCityGames.com. So go check out what they have going on. And if you are local to Utah, make sure that you swing on by and play a game there, because they have a fantastic community. I don't get over there as much as I would like, in honesty. So they are just a really, really great store. So thank you one and all. Can't wait to connect with you again here real soon. Best of luck in all your magic endeavors. And until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.